I'd like to welcome Maggie McClendon from the University of East London to kick us off with creating and maintaining partnerships to hear the care leader's voice. And hopefully Roberta will come in halfway through.
Thank you, Deirdre. My paper's delivered under the conference themes of the legacy of AIM Higher primarily, but also touches, I think, on the theme of community development. Okay, so what I'd like to do is really focus on the community of looked after children in East London. Just give you a little bit of background about historically the offer of outreach activity that we've delivered to this client group and how we went about building some of these relationships. The link with AIM Higher is that primarily the work has been funded through AIM Higher, although delivered by my own University of East London. I then want to go on to talk about, with the ending of the AIM Higher funding, the challenges, some of the challenges we faced about embedding this work within our geography, within East London and within my own institution, and the relationship that we've had with an organisation that's called now Buttle UK, that's a champion for, it's a champion for working with young people in poverty, primarily with disadvantaged individuals, but they've developed a particular brief around working with the care leader and the care leader voice in terms of progressing into higher education, and also then that they've now got a focus on stepping back and looking at the step in between school and HE. So they're now having a focus on college work and its place that it plays in terms of that progression. And I then want to just touch on the next steps, which I think is interesting, sort of coming out of the round table this morning where we're talking about social mobility and whose responsibility is it to maybe pick up some of these wider agendas around inequality and inclusion. Okay, so background of the sort of early years. We've been involved with our local AIM Higher partnership for how many years since AIM Higher is around? I'm trying to think now, is it about 11?
Well, partnership progression was 2002, and then an excellent challenge was 2001.
Yes, it's about 11 years. I've only been at the university 6 years, but we've received money from AIM Higher to work with excluded groups, underrepresented groups in higher education, for those of you who are from overseas countries. We delivered some work through our AIM Higher partnership, not led by my own institution, but in terms of disability. And the link there with the care leavers agenda is there was a big discussion about care leavers and the fact that care leavers weren't taking up the opportunities that AIM Higher were offering them for a number of different reasons. Either the opportunities weren't offering them what they wanted, or they weren't feeling confident enough to access them, or those opportunities weren't being promoted through their schools. Didn't know why, but we knew that care leavers weren't taking up this offer, and there's a real big debate about should we be putting on discrete activities that targeted care leavers or the stakeholders, gatekeepers that are involved with those care leavers, and that it was somehow wrong to be doing that, and would care leavers want to acknowledge themselves as coming from a care background. And we made a case of linking to the disability agenda to demonstrate that there'd been some real good practice in terms of that, just prior to when we got our first funding in 2007, but some real good practice where we'd looked at the mainstream offer, but we'd looked at how that maybe could be enhanced and tailored to the needs of a particular client group without going down a route that was looking at marginalising that group, but recognising that sometimes that group might need something slightly different. So, you know, a young person from a care background might need specific information around residential services or loaded in a different way. So they might need more information about their the financial package that's available to them at a different point. So we persuaded the LETG, which is London East Thames Gateway, who are my hire partnership, that this was the right approach. And we got some funding to deliver a series of work. We delivered some ambassadorial led mentoring sessions, campus visit for young people, a foster carer event, a care professionals event, and an event with we've got School of Education at University of East London, and it was an event with our to be newly qualified teachers, an awareness raising event run by one of our local boroughs in London, to come in and talk to them about needs of care leavers. And when they go out and work in the schools, they'll find there's a role called a designated teacher who has responsibility for this group, and to just raise awareness about maybe some of the issues and challenges this group were facing. Well, say we got the money to do it. It was really, really difficult. We've got this money. It was really difficult to actually work out how to reach this particular client group. We've got, again, I don't know how many colleagues are here for overseas at all, or am I speaking to everybody who's from an English background? Okay, I don't know how much you know about geographically how we're organised in England, or particularly in London, but we have what we call boroughs. So where I am in East London, we've got our boroughs, which give us our framework for really how we target and operate. So the boroughs that we predominantly work with at the university are in Barking and Dagenham, and that's somebody in the round table is talking about the sense of community and research, and that's Karina, who works at my university. She's been working in Barking and Dagenham, and that's the work she was referring to. So Barking and Dagenham is one of my boroughs, Hackney is another one of my boroughs, Newham, which is where the Olympics is going to be based, and Tower Hamlets, which is right next to the city, as is Hackney, but they're, you know, some of the most deprived boroughs, and some of the ones with most contrast. We'll have colleagues at the university who live in Newham and Tower Hamlets and Hackney, and they've got real pockets of affluence, but real pockets of deprivation as well. So we work with our traditional boroughs, and we work with them because we have really strong links through our 14 to 19 partnerships, and these are partnerships that were run by the boroughs that brought together interested stakeholders, similar to the Aim High partnership. So you get the colleges around the table, you get head teachers around the table, universities around the table, training providers around the table. But those normal pathways didn't produce, I guess, the conduits of being able to say reach our looked after children. And I guess it was because when we work with a local borough ordinarily, we work with the 14 to 19 team who are responsible for raising aspirations in the Aim High programme. And what we needed to do is really switch our emphasis to start to lead with work with the care leavers team or the in-care team that has responsibility for the educational needs of those young people. And layered onto that is a whole multiplicity of relationships of corporate parents and groups of social workers that will flow in and out. You've got foster carers who also are key gatekeepers in decision making. You've got a number of young people that might be a responsibility of a particular borough but might be placed out in Kent or up in Northumberland. They could be anywhere. So we had to start to build relationships again, and that was our challenges. New routes to get in, to build relationships, a whole different dialogue and way of talking about things, of working, and it was a hard hit. There was myself, one of my officers, and an AIM Hire officer, and it felt like we were on the road trying to sort of tout our wares, kept meeting people who said, well, yeah, really great what you're doing, but you need to talk to them over there. So, but we kept going, and we really felt that there was an appetite for what we were doing. The menu that we were offering was received in different ways by the borough. So, for example, Tower Hamlets, they were really keen for us to work with their care professionals to start to raise the awareness of some of the benefits, possible benefits to their young people of higher education. Weathers Hackney, they wanted interventions that directly impacted on the young people. So they were really keen for things like for the mentoring to take place. And every borough is set up in slightly different ways. Also into the mix comes the virtual head teacher system, virtual school systems, which some boroughs have embraced, some haven't embraced. And recently we've come across want to engage with Care Leaver Voice more in terms of refining what we do and how we do it, and is this what young people are looking for. We've now got the youth councils the children in care councils, which are being set up to a variable extent. And all of this has taken time to unpick. And I think it's a tribute to the partnership approach that we've sort of stuck with it. You know, many of these ways of engaging were built on individual and particular relationships, and as we've moved into really challenging times, particularly in the last year, colleagues have moved off and things have fallen apart again, and you felt like you were finally getting somewhere. In year two, we were finally getting somewhere, and now we've sort of had to take another step back. But onto this narrative of the, you know, post-AIM hire, what's gonna happen? I mean, I would say, tribute to our AIM hire partnership, that although, you know, they've been faced with a diminishing amount of funding to be able to invest in this type of work, they have been patient and they have stuck with us. And we've recently taken part in something, it was a national initiative, the AIM Hire Looked After Children Associate Scheme, which we've replaced with our mentoring scheme with. And in its final year, we were funded to set up a pilot care leaver strategy group. So pulling together all of those contacts that we've made, we've looked at the different sectors, we've now included third sector in that, we've included colleges in that, we're including the care leaver voice, and we're also trying to look at the geographical spread of those voices. So in the final year of the AIM Hire funding, they put up some money to enable us to bring those partners together to look at developing a stakeholder group, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. As far as my own institution is concerned, we've always had a commitment to the wider participation agenda. We take a huge percentage of our students from our local community. So for us, it's a very natural progression to want to lead on this work, but we want to deliver with our partners. So for example, on our strategy group, we've got another higher education institution, City, that's part of that. We've got a couple of our local colleges, one in Hackney, B6 College, Brookhouse College, and the other New Vic Sixth Form College in Bolton. So, well, it's a natural progression for us to want to be at the centre of that. And the statistics for our institution sort of evidence that work that we do around our widening participation. What we did face was a real challenge with. We've been working on pre-entry stuff, but once young people came to us, once the care leavers came to us or were making their application, things weren't really that good for them. So our open day, you know, you just rock up with your care leavers team or your corporate bearer, but there was no acknowledgement that you might need additional information or something slightly different from our residential services, that, you know, maybe our standard spiel of you have to live outside of the M25 motorway and hours, that's not going to work for most care leavers. You know, you might live in Barking and Dagenham, but actually you're not going to be able to access our accommodation because the payment system that's set up is at the time is absolutely rubbish, and you wouldn't even get off of the place. So we started to look at creating internal structures to move on from this pre-entry. We gathered internally interested individuals together. So we got our head of admissions, we have something in student services called Student Money Advice and Rights Team, we got them involved. We got our head of residential services involved, and my own team, which is works on the pre-entry side of things. And we looked at working with those departmental champions on going for this Buttle UK quality mark, because every vice chancellor loves a quality mark. So we sold it to them about we're going for this quality mark, and it helped us because in London the mayor's office is really keen to champion to address disadvantaged young people. And he started to write to vice chancellors in London, say, oh, you haven't got the Buttle UK mark, you know, what are you doing about it? So that enabled us to get a senior leader on board. So if people couldn't be bothered, they haven't got the time, it was too much of a fag to start to look at the admission system and to say, well, we don't even ask the question on our admissions form. UCAS have asked the question on the application form for a long time, are you a care leaver or not, then you choose to disclose or not. Our own application form, and we take a lot of students who late summer recruitment, didn't even ask that question. You know, there was no information pack that went out to say, did you know as a care leaver, you are entitled to apply for this additional financial package? So we started to look at that with our stakeholder group, and we found that there were lots of, sometimes really small things we could do, like setting up a website that then just linked off to our smart team or residential services. Just having a care leavers box where somebody could email in, and then somebody who had specific knowledge could pick that up and make be proactive, return the call and say, you know, how can I help you? And it's all about customer service. And as we move into the new fees regime, we're told all the time it's about customer service, about student experience. So why aren't we doing it with care leavers groups? There's lots of financial things that we have been doing. And we've also found that the changes around fair access and the offer agreement have also helped us, because we've been able to set up a new bursary for care leavers as well. So as we've always had a care leavers bursary, just general bursary, and care leavers can access that, or they can access a foyer bursary if they've lived in foyer accommodation. But we've now set up a care leavers accommodation bursary, and we've used it to address the point in accommodation where care leavers have to put up their deposit up front. But if you're not a care leaver and you want to live independently, you can offset that against your deposit if you're living externally. But that only came because of the changes in policy, and I think sometimes you need to be in the right place at the right time with a policy driver to enable you to enact change. So, as I say, Buttle UK has been a huge platform for us. The Mayor's Office and its interest in child deprivation has been a huge opportunity for us. It's enabled us to get in touch with, for example, a national agency called the Fostering Network, which the other day myself and a colleague from the Smart Team were able to go and talk to the West London Care Professionals Group with another London HEI and share our experiences and get some feedback from them to see if we're going along the right track with our pre-entry offer and the changes that we're putting in place internally. And the offer agreement and our WP strategic assessment, which was the call from HESI to lay down in writing what we're doing with our wider participation, for say about that as well. our strategy group is going to be really current post Empire to driving things forward and keeping the momentum going. We are looking at the moment of embracing more fully the care leaver's voice. So I was just talking to Deirdre before we started this session of we're trying to get some feedback on at the moment on just our open days, something really basic, just got open days at the moment. What would care leavers like from us? Do they actually want to have a distinct open day, particularly for themselves, or do they want a workshop run alongside the main open day? Or would they just like informed professionals sitting at the desk? And unless we actually have that care leaver voice in a meaningful way as part of our group, we're never going to know. We're just going to second guess. I can sit down with a care leaver manager and we can talk about what we think we would like to do. So we were coming up with like an incremental offer of fun with finance sessions, or we're going to have a foster carer fun family day. But unless we actually talk to the people that are involved, we're not gonna know. Data is a huge issue for us, and I'm embarrassed to say that besides not actually capturing who's a care leaver on a tick box form, neither did our MIS system enable us at any level to pick up any of this information. It's been really difficult to even find out historically who has drawn down funding for these bursaries in the past. Really difficult. It takes someone in the Student Money Advice and Rights team to actually handpick, go through and identify that. So data is something huge that we want to address and we must address, because that's going to provide us with some of the evidence as well as feedback from the users, the care leavers, the direction that we're going in. And these are forming the strands of work that the care leaver strategy group is going to pick up and going to address. One of the really key areas that we're being told by the care leaving teams that we need to work on is work with care professionals to raise the profile of higher education. And I can understand, in terms of sort of like priority of needs, I think Deirdre, you were saying this morning about for a young person is going through a dreadful time, of course they've got to sort of first and foremost roof over your head, keep yourself safe. But education can be a way of lifting someone out of a whole cycle. And when we talk about social mobility, I was thinking about there's a huge link between health, mental health, about the sort of social return investment theories. This is huge, and okay, it's really important to keep young people safe, but education is a way of them making informed choices about their lives too. So to the future, we know it's going to be a really volatile time. We've got huge changes. I mean, besides specific pieces of policy that are impacting on young people from a care background, like the leave to stay, which affects the entitlement to draw down funds and the sorts of fees you pay, we've just got the general fees issue going on at the moment. A lot of our foster carers have no experience of coming from a background where they've experienced higher education. So what chance do we stand? But we're going to keep going, obviously, with our agenda on this. What we're interested in doing is trying to make more out of what we've got. So we've lost half our team at the university, but we're not going to be thwarted by that. You know, we've lost funding to pay for mentors. What we're going to do is we're going to use staff that have been through our learning and teaching mentoring training. We're going to put enhanced child protection training online module they're going to do through the NSPCC. We've got a borough colleague coming in to talk to them about needs of care leavers, and then we've got our new mentors, and we've just started a staff mentoring scheme. We've got a huge volunteering module and scheme at the university, and we're going to be using those volunteers to go out and deliver some of that work. So we're determined to make more out of what we've got despite all of the cuts, and to work with the policy and to keep going with, you know, we're very lucky, I think, to have the Mayor's Office who will offer us networking opportunities to come together and share. So that's where we are with with our journey, and there's you know, lots of stuff going on, but sort of question time.
Got about 6 minutes.
Oh, so much for me to not saying I've only got six lines.
Maggie and I talked a little bit about this earlier today. The difficulty, as she's highlighted, of actually obtaining the data, the stats that you need for reporting purposes. But what we've also found, and others at other universities have found, is that students report themselves as care leavers, but they are in fact nothing of the kind. And there is a percentage every year who tick the box to say they've been in care, who actually haven't at all, who've misunderstood the term, or just tick every box, or whatever. And I know this has been an ongoing issue across universities of how you actually establish how many you've got. I mean, do you, if you give bursaries to your care leavers, do you ask them to give you evidence of this and so on?
Yeah, I mean, we looked to Mike Hill's here today, and we talked extensively to Mike when we started to set this up. And, you know, taking on board, not everybody who has come from a care background wants that to be known, and that's fine. Mm. That's absolutely fine. But we know that in order to deliver to the group who would like some sort of enhanced support, we do need to know some figures and some data. So we now ask for, we now ask people to declare. If they declare, they get triggered an e package, which has a covering letter in it explaining what we're trying to do and what the opportunities are. It's an offer to signpost to early and timely financial advice, an opportunity to apply for bursaries. It talks about the reasons why we would like to know this information. But I know some HEIs have been quite uncomfortable about the level of information that's being asked. For example, if you get this Buffalo UK quality mark, you've got to report back at quite a detailed level about individuals, and there's been like, well, why do you need to know at that level? I mean, we know just from like in the last year, because we had to make a case to our financial accountant about how much this might is liable to cost him, and we had between the two additional financial packages, we had 100 young people that claimed last year, and it's gone up year on year, but we don't know how many young people will come through from a care background that will want to declare. And we sort of see, I think, our role as improving our service, improving our signposting to people. Because what we've found out from talking to care leavers teams is that often young people will get themselves to a real crunch point, and then they'll just jack it all in. Whereas if we can discreetly signpost, and somebody was talking this morning about relationships and confidence building, and if we could just discreetly signpost, then hopefully when things get a bit difficult, then people will know where to go. You know, we've got some fantastic corporate parents around the university, and we get a lot of feedback from them. It's like the mystery shopper, how are we doing? I can go and talk to Lynn in Tower Hamlets and just tell me exactly how we're doing. Yeah, sometimes we don't do too well, but yeah, the data is a real issue. But we've altered our MIS systems now to pick that up, and as part of our offer agreement, we'll have to pick it up and we'll have to collate it.
Yeah, one of the universities in Greater Merseyside have that very issue as well, in terms of the data, because they have such small numbers that it's about anonymity. Can I say that word?
Yeah.
And so they were very uncomfortable about putting that in. But they expressed it to Buffalo UK, and Buffalo UK still required it, so that's it. But But in terms of that, is it, I mean, it is that thing of like once they've ticked that box, I think most universities do send out information saying you've ticked this box, which means that we've interpreted it as this. If this is not you, please ignore this letter. But if it is you, then we can provide this support, and that's how it's
The assessment, once you get your pack, it's got a frequently asked questions bit. It signposts you to the website and the email box. It's got a list of all the opportunities, and you can tick, say, I want to know more about this. You're asked to provide evidence on like the headed note paper, which is routine for most young people from a care background. They will have the letter that they tote around with them. And that's because we're giving over amounts of money, that's our audit trail back to sort of say, you know, And we would like to offer every care leave the opportunity to have this accommodation, but as we've got this year, we've got 75. We've had to save some for EU because of how it works with EU and English applications. We've got some for in-halls and some for out-halls, but we can find things about. But we had to convince our management accountant, because he was just banging on about risk, and we said, fine, but you're not always, if you've got a dependent, say you're a sole parent and you've got a dependent, you're not going to be able to live in our halls because you don't offer any family accommodation. So therefore, you're going to be discriminated. If we don't have the very tiny number of these off-campus bursaries for the accommodation, you're discriminating against people. Are you? At what level can you shoulder this risk? And he decided he'd go with 10 in the first instance and see how it went.
Just one more thing, because the student loans company are becoming much more proactive in terms of care leavers, so I think that will have an effect. And just one other anecdote, really. One of the groups that I sit on in up in Liverpool, they had an issue about students not turning up, you know, so about students not attending lessons, or lessons, tutorials, and lectures. And normally what they would do is they would send a letter home in the hope that parents would pick it up, and then the parent would ring up and say, what are you doing not turning up for lectures? But in a case we looked after care leavers, they were saying that they couldn't do any of this. So we discussed about sort of like sending that letter off to the leaving care teams, because they were the corporate parents. And I think that's just a thing to say. Thank you very much.
A lot of work being done by AHI nationally about aligning working care leavers and the policy, and Deirdre's done quite a lot on that, and a colleague Sarah Burrell as well, and they've been instrumental in supporting. Thank you.
Now I'd like to welcome Roberta on the answer.
About 20 minutes or so, and then question and discussion.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but I need to read. I hope you can understand. I think in Italy, the difficulties of realizing a system of recognition of learning experiences are linked to diverse factors: the enormous formal and juridical value of educational qualification linked to formal education paths that characterize the labor market and its regulation and dynamics; the regulation of professions and occupation is largely based on formal qualification and on the juridical values of education and or academic titles. And this makes it very difficult to recognize learning carried out outside formal context. The traditional weakness of short-term and adult education training, the scant cultural recognition attributed to the VET, independent of formal qualification given, the low level of institutional trust between the diverse sectors concerned, especially as far as VET providers and employers' representative bodies are concerned. Otherwise, we can mention the involvement of many institutions on a national level and those on a regional level, the lack of a systematic approach to the elaboration of tools for recognition and validation. And this is why we are witnessing on a national level the presence of initiatives concerning segments of the system realized without an organic framework to legitimize and consolidate the individual practices. Likewise, the experiments carried out by the Italian regions and the town administration have been realized with very different procedures, times, and approaches that are difficult to unite. That's the reason because we talked about local micro experiences. As a consequence of this systemic weakness, the different experiences and practices of validation undertaken within the different contexts can't be outspread, and the results can't be fully recognized. Furthermore, such results are not comparable since the purpose themselves and underlying principles driving each specific experience are quite different in relation to different contexts and demands. This has created a situation in which it's difficult to make people see the social and cultural value of learning itself and of the related certification. As a confirmation of the difficulty of facing a system of recognition, we can refer to the results of the final report, the European Inventory and Validation on Formal Informal Level, 2010. In it, Italy is situated among countries with a medium low degree of development, countries which have established validation system in one or more sector, but not still have an overall framework for all types of learning. Therefore, in a recent study of OECD, considering the heterogeneity of the definition given to the practices of recognition and validation of learning of countries involved in the research, in Italy, the only one among 16 participants, there are no specific terms. As regards university, the ministerial degree of 2004 states a recognition of 60 university training credits, but these 60 credits were reduced to 12 in the recent law to reform the university system. And finally, the draft of the law of the Minister of Education regarding lifelong learning, which includes the reorganization of adult education, states the recognition of educational credits and certification of acquired learning. But anyway, it has never been approved. The only piece of research carried out on recognition of non-formal informal learning for adults concerning university realized in 2008-2010 aimed at identifying university practices used to recognize learning, showed a substantial lack of interest on the part of Italian university in lifelong learning, besides a weak awareness of the importance of the recognition of learning acquired in non-formal informal learning situation for the construction of a student's careers. As confirmed by research, universities faced with a request for recognition of credits for students have resolved the problem by awarding credits for internship or trainership more frequently than for disciplinary education. It's within this panorama of meaning that the project Europlacement, expertising and sharing lifelong guidance for the placement, was created and realised with the aim to integrate non-formal informal recognition into career guidance services. It was coordinated by the University of Parma, involving 13 participants from 8 European countries. The main phases of the project were a context analysis to analyze the labor market in the partner countries with some reference to local realities. This analysis was based on quantitative indicators, employment rates, unemployment, transition times, and on a qualitative quantitative analysis that included a SWOT analysis of the strengths and weaknesses of the partner institution providing placement and guidance services. This analysis produced national reports and articles. The next step was an adaptation of instruments considered to be good practices to be reflected in learning courses. Then a creation of an e-learning pathway, and an adaptation of tools for transfer and the creation of e-learning courses aimed to support lifelong guidance. And finally, a pilot project to test the learning routes and evaluate their effectiveness run at University of Parma, Catania, Budapest and Veliko Turnovo. The main project aim was to promote the transfer of a set of products mainly produced by the same partners in previous projects, enabling people to enter the labor market through career guidance services. To this aim was created an e-learning platform for student and graduate job seekers in English or in Italian. The proposed pathway is intended to provide support in the soft and difficult process of transition from university to employment. And a learning platform for career guidance in English and Italian too aims to develop a concrete contribution to career guidance, providing a set of tools created to facilitate the design and delivery of work guidance programs. This approach has been favored through a pilot experimentation of target groups of students about each for each of the university mentioned above. The students of the pilot project were university students and graduates, first degree, who were under a process of transition to the labor market. They were selected in such a way as to combat all forms of discrimination, female gender, migration background, and any kind of minorities. Minorities will be the priorities in the selection of the beneficiaries. The composition of 51% of women and 20% of disadvantaged people was chosen to improve the employability of the two specific groups. The students were followed from May to July to personal contacts, groups, workshops, face-to-face contacts with the recruiting managers and the learning activities in order to recognize the competencies acquired in informal, informal ways outside the university context. The learning module for students comprises a series of tools developed in order to help job seekers to describe their knowledge, skills and abilities adequately to acquire useful information of occupation consistent with their own course of study, to locate public services and individuals dedicated to those who are looking for a job, to provide an effective curriculum and so on. The aim of the first module is to help job seekers to define their professional profile, their strengths, abilities, knowledge and skills. Section 2 contains useful tools for keeping job seekers' knowledge of the profession required by the labor market, which will make it be easier for them to identify a profession that is consistent with their course of study. In section 3, the user has the possibility to get useful information to start an active job search, thanks to database, portal for job search, the curriculum vitae and cover letter. And the module 4 that presents the opportunities offered by lifelong learning. Since one of the objectives of the project was to identify user-friendly tools for students with greater difficulties in finding a job, attention was concentrated on students enrolled in the Faculty of Education Studies, whose employment situation compared with that of graduates from other faculties in the University of Catania appears decidedly problematic. As a merge, in the latest national statistic related to 2010 on graduates, the percentage of students with jobs at the Faculty of Educational Studies when you are for graduation is only 32.9%. You can compare with the data from the University of Catania. Of those, only 33% of women work with a net salary of 590 euro a month. Besides, another alarming piece of data is the substantial inefficiency of a degree as a means to get a job, as held by 45.7% of those interviewed. And students chosen for the experimentation were aged between 21 and 28. None of them said they had a job Four students had already finished their curricula internship, and all of them had been involved in voluntary activities. None of them had ever done e-learning course. Considering the context of the situation of the scant receptiveness of the area of Eastern Sicily regarding both the figure of the outside school educator and that of the aspect of training processes, also because of the difficult integration between the university training system and the territory, the project has assumed the sense of contribution to community development. It was held that the increasing visibility of non-formal, informal learning outcomes for students whose status is characterized by low social cultural background and weak curriculum could help to motivate them to further learning and to navigate better about the system of lifelong learning and the labor market. To this end, in its initial phase, the experimentation focused on the discussion of the training experiences carried out in non-formal, informal situation, and on any work experience so as to help students to carry out self-assessment of their abilities to actively seek work. The compilation of a simple list of experiences of voluntary or paid work of recent years and the guided discussion that followed allowed the emergence of a wealth of training experiences which students were not aware of. None of them seemed to think it was evident that these activities had determined the acquisition of relational and professional competences that the course did not necessarily give them. I would like to remember that many of these students worked as trainers, educators in the community, but that they are not aware of their competences. The second and main phase of the experimentation, which lasted 4 weeks and aimed at the compilation of a part of e-learning of Model 1, led to the drawing up of Europass and the letter of motivation, imagining a profile among those set out in a list of a profession inside of ISFOL, that is the National Institute for Training of Workers. The curriculum and the letter seen by a professional at the placement office in the University of Parma, that was the project leader, and returned to the students, gave results that were more than satisfactory and fully supplied what was asked. The third phase consisted of group discussion on the path taken. During several focus group sessions, the students could express their opinion on the path and on the level of satisfaction which was achieved. Once again, the strong educational impact of tools of an experimental path was highlighted. It offered the participants the possibility to recognize their competences, to identify how they can be transferred to the world of work, and to allow them to reach the point of a competing Europass. One of the results is the knowledge that the non-formal and informal learning constitute elements that there are at least as a precious element as a formal learning. Consider the slogan of the Norwegian campaign for skill passport. You know more than you think. Some final consideration. All the students claimed that they had acquired a greater self-esteem by the end of the path, especially thanks to the recognition of their own competencies and knowledge, despite the difficulties regarding expressing knowledge in competencies. Another positive aspect was the utility of the path in the identification, planning, and development of one's career, of any weaknesses, special interests, or strength. For the experimenter, the path was especially useful to develop awareness of the guidance needs of students and young people, and of the scant weight that the latter attributed to their non-formal, informal educational experiences. However, the needs to improve career guidance services in tertiary education essentially means the possibility of creating integration between placement guidance services and the roles of teaching staff, the provision in a university curriculum or career management courses, opportunities for work experience, and of profiling a portfolio system. Anyway, we can only note in Italy a reluctance among universities to give a consideration to career guidance services, which are increasingly destined to affect the organization of education processes.
Thank you.
Thank you.